Here we go now, baby. We are right back. There we go. We are right back into the action for another day of the week. Welcome to the Monday edition of Before You Bet right here on the Covers YouTube channel. Make sure you smash that subscribe button right down there. So coming off of the first four games here in Super Wild Card Weekend, it certainly was wild. My Miami Dolphins did what they do. The Dallas Cowboys did what they do. We're going to be touching on those games later on the show here. We have a Monday doubleheader, though, thanks to the Bills and Steelers getting postponed. So picks for that game, picks for Eagles and Bucks. Lots to discuss, the fallout, some coaching stuff here with Jason Logan. Then in the second half of the show, we will get into our best bets for the NBA with John Mettler. NBA, a little cold for yours truly to start 2024, so some things to clean up. Hopefully we get on the right track here starting today. Guys, if you like the show, it's very easy to let us know. Just hit the like button right down there. Make sure you are subscribed to the Covers YouTube channel. You see our fancy graphic over there. Producer Mick throws it up. Thousands of dollars we spent on that graphic, so we got to get our money's worth. So yeah, make sure you subscribe to the channel. Okay, let's get into it here. Let's bring in my first guest of the day, our resident Dallas Cowboys fan. So we'll get into that whole thing here in a little bit. But J-Lo, I got to ask, how do you sleep last night as a Cowboys fan?
I don't know. I'm able to get, my fandom has slowly died over my years of working with Covers. It's like the sports betting side of me is definitely overcome. I think I lost more sleep on the Tony Pollard prop than I did on them actually losing the game. Okay. Because he was, I got a good number, 59 and a half early when that market opened, and just game script obviously wasn't there. He finished with 56 in the second half where they didn't run the ball. But no, just a bad taste overall. But it brought back memories of that Arizona game for Dallas, which I believe was like week three. Yeah. They just didn't show up. It's like they didn't want to be there, or they just expected to have it fall in their lap. And we can get into that, but
I got to follow in your footsteps and not letting it bother me. I lose sleep. I wake up feeling like dog shit after the Miami Dolphins play like dog shit. And why do I do it? This team and these players don't know me. I don't know these people. But it happens year after year after year. I never learn my lesson. I can't help it. It's how I feel inside of my heart. But now it's just stress-free football. I just have to worry about my bets now. It was much easier when the Dolphins sucked. Now they're out of it, so I don't have to worry about them sucking again and ruining my sleep. Okay, so two games to get into. Five total bets for the NFL between the two of us. I will get us started. We will get things going here in Buffalo. Steelers in town. A day late, better late than never. I'm going to take the underdog, the Pittsburgh Steelers, to cover the spread here at plus 10. Check out the Buffalo Bills. They play down to the competition. They're 0-8 against the spread in their last eight games as a double-digit favorite. And they only have one win by more than one score in their last six games. You think they've been destroying everyone lately, given what the spread is, but look at some of their recent games. They barely snuck by the likes of Easton Stick and Bailey Zappi down the stretch. How'd they beat the Dolphins last week? They needed a circus catch in the end zone and a 95-yard punt return to pave the way to victory there. Don't forget about the wildcard round last year. Big favorite against Skylar Thompson and the Dolphins. They barely snuck by them in that game. Big question here for the Bills. Will their turnovers finally catch up to them, especially against a ball-hawking team like the Steelers? 28 giveaways on the season for Buffalo. Sloppy plays are part of their DNA. Taking the ball away is a big part of Pittsburgh's DNA. 27 takeaways on the season, tied for the second fewest giveaways, by the way. Mason Rudolph still hasn't thrown an interception. Kind of impressive. And don't dismiss the mounting injuries for the Bills. Yes, TJ Watt will get all the headlines here for being out, but no Gabe Davis for Buffalo, their second leading receiver. Secondary's beat up too. Taylor Rapp is out. Rasul Douglas, questionable at corner. Small injuries add up. So yeah, I'll take the Steelers to at least be a little bit competitive, cover that 10-point spread. J-Lo, you have a prop for this game. What do we
I do. At? I will say I took Steelers plus 10 earlier in the week, took it in my NFL underdogs column. That was based more on kind of the weather situation that was building for Sunday. The total kept dropping, and I was like, how the hell are they going to cover 10 points if they don't score any points? But I will say the Steelers in those last three games before the playoffs, playing their best two-way football, high in EPA per play and EPA allowed per play as well, too. So, but yeah, I like a play in this one. Kind of had to re-handicap this entire game. And I went to Pittsburgh running back, Jaylen Warren, and his combo prop of rush plus receiving yards. And I'll tell you why I went with this combo prop rather than just the rush or the receiving. So for me, especially with this game moved to Monday, weather's not going to be that much of an impact, especially compared to what we were expecting on Sunday. And the Steelers are going to have to play some possession football. This is a team that ran at the highest rate in that three-game winning streak to get themselves into the playoffs. And they're going to have to play some possession football. They're going to have to play keep away and run this ball against a Bills defense that ranked near the bottom third in run-stop defense overall on the season. And with Warren, he's been splitting carries with Najee Harris, getting a lot of carries during that three-game winning streak and during the second half of the season. So I expect him to have a pretty solid day on the ground. My projection was around 40 yards for him in this one. But given now the total ticking up to 38.5, it was as low as 33 points when we were playing on Sunday, and a big spread. You could see the Bills holding a significant lead in the second half if game script holds up. And with that, I think Warren still stays on the field. He kind of has a longer shelf life in that particular situation because they have to pass the ball. And he's been their pass catching running back. And he's been a very, very popular target for Mason Rudolph. He's gone over 20 yards in three of the four starts for Mason Rudolph. And then he's taking on a Bills defense that gave up a lot of yards and very susceptible to pass catching running backs this year. So I had his receiving yards projected around 24, but I think that ceiling's even higher, especially if the pressure that the Bills can gets after Mason Rudolph, Warren becomes that popular check down option, and then he's able to pick up those yards after the catch as well. So add it all together, it's around 64 yards. This market was as low as 54.5. I bet it at that number. It's now 57.5, as high as 59.5 right now. So shop around. You can still find 57.5, and given my projection to be around 64, 65 yards, still a pretty good number.
All right, big Jaylen Warren show here today. I like the way you think. I got a prop on this guy too. I'm going to take him to have over 3.5 receptions, plus money on this one, plus 120. So he is tied for the team lead in targets since Mason Rudolph became the starter and has at least 4 catches in 5 straight games. Very efficient stuff. 23 catches on 26 targets in those last 5 games. So hopefully we see checkdown city here in Buffalo this evening. And this is a pretty good matchup for him. Buffalo has struggled to defend running backs in the passing game. Bottom 10 in both receptions and yards allowed to running backs on the season. So let's hope Warren fills up that stat sheet here in Buffalo later this afternoon / this evening. Okay, on to game number 2. We have the Eagles in Tampa Bay. I believe a rematch from what, week 3? Sometime earlier in
the season? Week 3, yeah.
Yeah, you have a prop. I have a pick on the total. Get us started. What's your favorite prop for the game?
Sure. I'm going to go to Vonnie Smith over his longest reception prop, so over 23.5 yards. It's out there minus 115. This one's as high as 25.5, some places at 24, or a more expensive 23.5. But A.J. Brown's out. So it's going to give Smith extra touches. He's going to jump up in the depth chart. He's going to get extra passes his way, and those just a bigger opportunity to put a big one on the board. And if we look at this Bucs defense, they run a blend of man and zone, but they do predominantly lean into man with the 13th highest rate of man coverage. And that is a little more susceptible for those home run plays. And if we look at the Bucs on the season, they were pretty bad at limiting teams to those explosive plays. Plays of 20-plus passing yards or more, they finished near the bottom of the league. They've also 6 most yak yards, yards after the catch. So those bonus yards could be there for Smith when he catches one and breaks one off. And Smith has burned some blitz-happy defenses, some very aggressive pass rush defenses with some big plays already this season. And Tampa Bay, one of the highest blitz rates in the league, with Todd Bowles calling the plays. Now, he did only have a long of 15 in that week 3 game with Tampa Bay. But if we look at recent matchups, he had longs of 30 and 29 versus Dallas. He had longs of 36 versus the Giants in his one matchup with the Giants. He had 33 long versus Buffalo. And then he had a 63-yard home run play against Minnesota, which blitzed a ton this year. So that opportunity to find the space underneath and then bring that yards after the catch is there. And this, like I said, this market is moving up. It's as high as 25.5 now. So shop around for that low number. I like him to have a long reception of 24 or more yards tonight.
Okay, Smith to be involved in the pass game there. My best bet for this game, I am going to take under 43 points for these teams. It is all about location. So check this out. The Eagles road under record plus the Bucs home under record, 13-4 on the season. Average combined score in Bucs home games this season, just 34.7 points. And check out the Eagles. Their offense doesn't travel well. On the road, they average 10.2 fewer points compared to at home. Check out the Tampa Bay defense. They're starting to peak right now. Just 25 total points allowed in their last three games. They're ranked fourth in yards per play allowed in this span. Specifically, they've been very strong against a run, which could create some longer third downs for Philly, limiting the brotherly shove. Tampa Bay's offense, meanwhile, though, kind of limping into the playoffs here. Just 21 points in their last two games. Baker Mayfield is nursing both ankle and rib injuries. And a reason why I like the Bucs here as an under team in general, their offense is awful in the red zone. Their defense is elite in the red zone, 30th in red zone offense, third in red zone defense. And in that week three game, they did combine for just 36 points when they played in Tampa Bay earlier this season. Both teams do look a little bit different now, to be fair, but I think the scoring patterns, it all adds up to a lower scoring game tonight in Tampa Bay. Okay, so J-Lo, I alluded to it off the top. Both of our teams are out. Very disappointing exits here.
We should be wearing black teams today, right? Instead of the gray, we should be wearing black.
People want to call them frauds. Like, that's something that, like, people were messaging me about the Dolphins to rub it in. They're frauds. What was it? Guys, people have been saying that since the midpoint of the season. When everyone's calling a team a fraud, I do not think that they qualify as being a fraud. If everyone knows they're a fraud, are they really a fraud? I don't know. No reason to debate that. So all my anger about the Miami Dolphins, I got it out of my system after that week 18 loss to Buffalo. So no need to go into great detail and repeat everything I said last week. You know, very high highs, very low lows for the Miami Dolphins. Sound like a broken record. I've been saying that since the start of last season. But okay, so what do the Dolphins do from here, from a big picture perspective? Yeah, there's some things you have to tweak, some guys you got to bring in, some guys you got to let go, some salary cap stuff. But from a big picture perspective, what's the best option? I think the best option is simply just to run it back here. Every team has injuries, but for the Miami Dolphins, it got absolutely ridiculous towards the end of the season. Defense alone, in that wildcard game, they were without Jalen Phillips, Chubb, Javon Holland, Xavier Howard, Jerome Baker, Andrew Van Ginkle. Within that group, that's four of their five best defenders. You take four of the five best defensive players off any team in the league, what do you think is going to happen? And you can't tell me not having Waddle and Mostert down the stretch of the regular season, that hurt them significantly as well. You don't think those guys and maybe one or two of those defenders would have made a difference in that Bills week 18 game? And what about the revolving door on the offensive line all season? So context matters a little bit. You do have to have perspective. And sometimes excuses are legitimate. You can say excuses, but sometimes excuses are legitimate. So a lot of injuries, it got ridiculous, just completely ravaged by injuries down the stretch. So it wasn't the best version of the team we were seeing at the end of the season. On the negative side, things that you cannot defend, I got to be fair. You cannot defend Tua shrinking once we get to December in the cold and in tight spots. And Mike McDaniel's play calling in tight spots is absolutely awful as well. This team, they are complete and total front runners. Would being healthier, would that have masked some of those limitations? Maybe. Who knows? But you need both guys to really improve next season. You know, not everyone's Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady right off the bat, where you step in and you're excellent and you're in the mix in the playoffs and the stakes. You don't shrink under the bright lights, but these guys are shrinking under the bright lights. So they do have to learn to win. It's something that they do have to overcome. One thing I will say, though, about the quarterback position, everyone, you know, the Dolphins, you got to get rid of Tua. You got to bring in this guy. Can we stop it with this thing where every quarterback is either a legitimate Hall of Famer or a piece of crap that the team has to get rid of? A lot of the guys are in the middle. Tua is one of the guys who is in the middle right now. And yeah, he does have a lot of things that he has to fix. You know, people saying they should replace him with Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, You think he has, does he have a big time reputation in big games? Absolutely not. That's one of the biggest knocks on him. He's coming off a major injury too. People replace him with Justin Fields. What are you talking about? Justin Fields, does this guy have a sparkling reputation? He's a horribly inaccurate passer. Having an accurate passer is a very big part of this attack. So the Dolphins, they're stuck with these guys. So run it back. Hope for some injury luck next season. Hopefully, you know, you can take this experience and learn from it. It sucks because this is the history of the team. Then I see the stat that comes out last night after the Lions won the game. The Miami Dolphins now have the longest drought in the NFL of not winning a playoff game. I think it's like 21 seasons or something like that. So that sucks as a Dolphins fan. So that is my bow on the Dolphins season. It should be interesting to debate with people and talk about Tua, and you have to do that whole thing. We have to do that again now for another season. I'm sick and tired of doing it, but here we are again. We got no choice. People, are they going to pay Tua? Probably. Justin Herbert blew a 28-point lead in the playoffs, and he got paid. So I don't know. That's just the system and how it's set up in the NFL. It's kind of weird that everyone has to get a record-breaking contract. So hopefully he gets some sort of a team-friendly deal because he does not deserve a record-breaking contract. You got to be fair. So J-Lo, from one loser to another, I'll pass the baton to you. How do you sum up your Dallas Cowboys, who yet again urinated all over themselves in a big spot?
Yeah, it's just the blame goes to the coach. I'm not a big Mike McCarthy fan. And there has to be a switch that you throw in the playoffs. And it's a sense of urgency. It borders on fear. Despite what the spread says, despite what your regular season record was, you have to play with urgency. You have to play with a different intensity. The do your job and everything will take care of itself philosophy. And that's what you get from coaches like Mike McCarthy. Go out and do your job, and then it'll all pan out. It doesn't fly in the tournament. You can't just go out there and do your job gets you sent home. Everything has to be extra. It has to be the fastest sprint. It has to be the hardest hit. You have to have the most concentration on every route, on every catch. Everything, it has to have that intensity stepped up. And that begins with the coaching staff and it begins with the organization, because I and that's why I believe we're seeing the old guard of coaches kind of pass through now. Belichick's gone. You got Saban, some of these older coaches, and we're seeing more former coaches, guys who have kind of been in those situations or at least a little closer to what the players are going through. We're seeing more of those former players in coaching roles. And it's not just in the NFL, it's in the NBA, it's in a lot of different sports because they connect with the players. Money used to be the motivation because money was tied to success. So when we win, we get more money. And while that is somewhat true, with the way that these guys get paid now and the bonuses and the endorsements and all of their side hustles and stuff, the money is there, but it's not necessarily the motivator. And so you have to find a coach who can inspire them and motivate them. And you have to find guys that people want to play for and then play for the greater good of the collective group, and everyone's buying into it. Just going through the motions and doing your job and not challenging yourself to get better and move the bar in the postseason, that's what you need to do. And that's why I think why Detroit won that game. You know, you look at what they did in that game, they were pretty bad defensively in that game. The Rams were moving the ball at will, but what did they do? They stepped up in the red zone, and Detroit was among the worst red zone defenses all year. LA, one of the best red zone offenses all year. And the Lions said, we're not going to do that. We're going to bend, but we're going to break. You're not going to break us here. And they stepped up, and you saw then that whole locker room is on fire. The general manager is the loudest one in the elevator. Like, that's what you want. And I don't think Mike McCarthy brings that kind of fire that you need to get over the hump. Do I think Dan Quinn is that guy? The players love Dan Quinn. And I would much rather see Dan Quinn stick around as a head coach than Mike McCarthy. But I don't want any part of these old guard coaches. Get some new blood in there, because you can have great coordinators that do all the X's and O's, but you need a head coach who is the true north. He is the compass of the team. And he sets the tone. And I don't think Mike McCarthy's tone is not there.
Okay, so...
Tone deaf. Let's just say that.
Absolutely. And owner of the team, Jerry Jones, loves to be front and center. You know, you see him out speaking to the media yesterday. He likes to hum and haw when it comes to these head coach decisions. He's got to pull the Band-Aid here within 24 hours.
This has been the problem with the Dallas franchise for the last, 20 years. You had just subservient head coaches. You had Wade Phillips. You had Jason Garrett. You know, they had Parcells at one time, and that team was fantastic. And then you ran him out of Dodge. He couldn't play with Jerry. You ran him out of Dodge. You had a bunch of these yes sir, no sir coaches that bowed down to Jerry Jones, and that vanilla style of coaching wasted years of talented teams. And you're seeing this group now wasted.
Okay, well, let's talk about the big rumor, or the one that people are running with here on social media. Bill Belichick to the Dallas Cowboys. Now, okay, so we're on the same page. I don't think that Belichick is the home run hire that everyone's making him out to be. First of all, he's 71 years old, so how many good years are you going to get out of this guy? And this guy's a year removed from making Matt Patricia his offensive coordinator. This season, what was the big problem at quarterback last season? Well, you only had Mac Jones and Bailey Zappi. What does he do this season? He brings back those exact same guys. So Belichick is a guy, awesome reputation, but you can only let him get by on that reputation for so long. And like I said, he's 71 years old. So you don't like Belichick in this spot.
Who do you like? Because he's that old guard of coach, and he won't connect to the players. And this is a group of there's a lot of young guys on this team that they love. Like I said, they love Dan Quinn because Dan Quinn is an intense kind of dude, and he can kind of get down on that level. I mean, why not Harbaugh? Why not go get Harbaugh? He is a former quarterback, a former player. He's had success in the pro level. He's had success now at the college level. I think he is someone that brings kind of everything to the table. He brings intensity. And he brings a resume, and he brings the X's and O's to the table as well too. So that's, that would be a nice fit for me. But I mean, I think Dan Quinn is that guy. And then you bring in a great offensive coordinator, a nice offensive young mind that's thinking and can utilize guys like CeeDee Lamb. And I mean, everyone's like, oh, what are you going to do with Dak? It's the same thing with the Tua thing. Like, are you going to go find a better quarterback? The guy's in the MVP conversation. He was a top three quarterback all season. He had a bad game. Again, I think that all trickles down to the coaching staff and just not being able to flip that switch in the postseason. My goddamn men's basketball team gets nasty and mean and angry when it comes to playoff time. I've got my daughter's spring league basketball team. When it's tournament time, they're able to flip a switch and they play harder and they get on the floor and they play with a little more intensity. And that's what you did not see that from Dallas yesterday.
Yeah, Dallas, they weren't in it for a second. I don't know if it was overconfidence. Did they forget what has happened to them the past couple of years in the playoffs? Just complete and total no-show. So I wasn't going to get on there and rub it in as a Miami Dolphins fan. I got no business doing that. I actually felt sympathy for the Dallas Cowboy fans in my life. But, this is a real problem with Dak. It is a pattern that we've seen from him. But I think you can't just move on from him at this point of where he's at in his contract. As well, unless they want to commit, if they want to commit to going into a full-on rebuild, which isn't going to happen.
That's the thing. So you either go with what you got and shake up the compass of the team, which is the head coach, or you just completely go and blow it all to the ground and rebuild from the bottom. And I don't think you need to do that with this team. They're very, very close.
Indeed. I think any team would be very lucky to have Mike Vrabel as the head coach. I think you potentially have a guy for 15 years right there. Mm-hmm. Mike Tomlin type of 20 years, maybe, he's not really an old guy by any means. Harbaugh, my concern with him is maybe he seems to get bored a little bit, 4 or 5 years in, would he be looking for the next thing to conquer maybe, but it will be interesting to see. But Jerry, pull the Band-Aid. None of this humming and hawing like you did with Jason Garrett. You got to move on. Okay, so some other quick thoughts from myself for Wildcard Weekend. We won't discuss these in detail. You can't kill the guy, but Joe Flacco finally fizzled out. We probably should have saw that coming. A big theme going into that game was the Browns' defense does not travel well. They went into that game the fewest points allowed at home, but the most on the road. Their defense was atrocious in that game, so that's something they got to fix going into next season. How about the power of patience with Jordan Love? Everyone killed the Packers for drafting him, moving up to draft him, including yours truly. But they saw an opportunity at the time, and many years later, it's really working out well for them. Aaron Rodgers didn't make it to the playoffs last year, did he?
But they did the same thing with Rodgers. Like, it was the same situation. They had Favre. Yeah. Rodgers slid in that draft, and they were like, we have to take this guy. He's there. And they have an opportunity to kind of replace a guy that's on the twilight of his career. Favre took it personal. Then Aaron Rodgers took it personal when Love was there. But it's just smart building for the future and not kind of compromising yourself for that 3 years that you might have to squeeze another MVP season out of Aaron Rodgers before he parts off somewhere.
Yeah, so it worked out in the long run. Another big quarterback story. The gap between C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young grows even more. This could be an all-timer. I don't want to overreact too much. I remember people used to rub it into me, the Justin Herbert and Tua stuff. I think Tua has kind of closed the gap on Herbert a little bit more based on what we've seen out of Herbert blowing leads and not being able to come back. And Tua, we're not going to argue that right now. But the gap between these guys grows even more. It's not Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan, but it could end up being a Marvin Bagley Jr. over Luka type of situation here in the long run. So we'll see how that works out. One thing I'm worried about for the Lions, I'm rooting for the Lions. I want the Lions to go the whole way and win the Super Bowl. But they were, and yes, they deserve to celebrate and be incredibly high. I hope it's not like a letdown spot type of situation for them. Next season, I hope they took their time to celebrate last night, and I hope they're waking up this morning ultra focused, ready to watch the game to figure out who their opponent is going to be here in the next round. I know it's a not happy to be here type of vibe, but they have a clear path to the NFC Championship game and maybe even to the Super Bowl. Something always seems to happen with the 49ers in the playoffs. Ran out of quarterbacks, so.
It's a home game for Detroit. That crowd will not let them have, and I don't believe in letdown spots in the playoffs, but that crowd will not let them have a letdown spot. If you can't get out there and feel the electricity with that group of people in the stands going bananas, and they've been going crazy since the preseason. They were talking about how loud it was there. They get the home team. I'm not worried about a letdown spot from the Rams. I am worried about their defense being able to play that style of football.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens tonight with this Philly and Tampa Bay game, because those are two.
It's very a good story.
Opponents.
I'm happy for Goff. I don't like it when the people on the internet in your couches, we choose these players that we want to turn into punching bags and make fun of them. And that's what happened with Goff when he was with the Rams, and oh my God, he's holding Sean McVay back. And that very well might've been the case at the time, but they kind of threw him under the bus. He got mocked quite a bit, and he went to Detroit and took a little bit of time, and he improved as a quarterback and is living up to being a number one overall pick. And then we saw him. He played great last night, so great for him. Hopefully he can keep that going. Let's wrap with this here, J-Lo, because John Mettler, I told him to be ready to go at quarter after. It's about 12:30.
John has been here for 10 minutes.
So there's one game official here. The Packers versus the 49ers will go down next Saturday. The spread is 9.5 with a total of 50.5. I kind of lean the 49ers, not an official bet here, but of San Francisco's 12 wins this season, 11 of them were by double digits. So I'll leave it at that. Any thoughts on the opening spread or total for the game?
Yeah, I got a bet on under 51. This one went up to 51 at Pinnacle. It's -116. I don't know if it's come back. It opened 49.5. It's ticking upward. I feel like the Green Bay result's kind of influencing this line a little too much. Like, let's not forget the Packers scored a defensive touchdown in the just before the half. They had a interception deep in Dallas's end that basically was an automatic red zone possession, allowed them to score in that one. And then at the tail end of that game, Green Bay was pulling starters, and they were pulling starters on defense. Dallas scored 16 garbage time points in the second half against their second and third string guys on defense. So I think that result, all those points, what was it, like 48-34 or something, 38-32, all those points I think are kind of blowing this up a little bit. We look at the 49ers and the way that they do their business on offense. They run at the second highest rate in the league. They, with all that pre-snap motion that they run, they're the slowest tempo in terms of seconds per play in the league. I expect long, extended drives from them. The Packers are not a good run defense, even against Dallas last night. They still gave up almost 5 yards per carry when Dallas was able to run the football. And I think they're going to park Green Bay on the sideline. And then this is a second straight travel spot for the Packers. Love going up against a very good San Francisco defense and potential rain for the Saturday night's forecast in Santa Clara. So I bet the under, like I said, it moved up to that key number of 51 at Pinnacle. Jumped on it there. I expect it to come back down a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Should be interesting to see what happens there. The Packers, a team with nothing to lose. The 49ers, perhaps a team of destiny. Maybe everything will come together for them finally this year. We'll see what happens on the weekend. J-Lo, we will leave it at that, but I will catch you again later in the week for the Sharp 600. Then back here again next Monday on Before You Bet. Best of luck with your bets tonight. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you again next time we see you.
All right. Thanks for having me. Good luck, Joe.
Indeed. Okay. Some good comments rolling in here. We'll get to some of those after we go through the NBA. Let's bring in our guy, John Mettler, who's been waiting forever. Now, John will ask, we have a little pre-show meeting. He'll say, what time do you want me to come back, Joe? I said, well, I don't know, maybe 12 after, quarter after. And here he is 15, 17 minutes later. So John, thanks for hanging out. How you making out today?
Actually, it might have worked out better. My dog was up here the last 15 minutes and she just went back downstairs. So it could be bark free if because I'm a little later on here.
Okay. Yeah, indeed. So it worked out for the best. Okay. So MLK Day in the US of A today. So we have some daytime NBA action. I wish we had more random weekday NBA and NHL games just occasionally, not a whole ton of them, but you know, maybe the random Tuesday afternoon games. That's why I like baseball quite a bit, because you have games just going on all the time. So let's get into some of these bets here. I have two spreads, you have two props, and you have a few other picks that you want to give out on the back end of the show here. I'm going to get us started with the San Antonio Spurs +8 in Atlanta taking on the Hawks. So the Atlanta Hawks are a team that cannot be trusted. They are 4-16 against the spread as a favorite this season, 2-10 ATS as a home favorite this year. The Spurs on a very competitive stretch right now, 6 straight covers, keeping things close in losses. The Hawks, meanwhile, they got destroyed by 28 points versus the Wizards in their last game. A lot of no-shows from them this season. And then you dig into the stats. The Spurs are better or close in many key stats over the last 10 games. They're shooting it better. They're turning it over less. They're playing much better defense. So I do think they give them a game just like they did back on November 30th when they played in San Antonio. The Spurs only lost by 2 in that one. So I like the Spurs to be competitive tonight in Atlanta. You have a prop for this game, a familiar name on your betting card here. What do you got for us, John?
Yeah, it could be the last time ever for this guy too. Deonte Murray over 4.5 assists. So I bet at +130 this morning for Murray. I personally think this is probably it for the Hawks today after they play the Spurs. I don't think they wanted to blow this up before the holiday, and it's a big game for Atlanta itself. They kind of had that with you. They lost. They got blown out by the Wizards on Saturday, and they brought all their starters back in the fourth quarter, even though they were down like 30, and they played a good chunk of that fourth quarter. I think that was kind of like them saying to the coach, like, give us one last chance to prove to front office that we can make this work. And they didn't, but, I had this prop on Murray on Saturday. It was +100 at 4.5. I'm coming back to it at +130. To me, this is just too low. Usually Murray's like a 5.5. If you're looking at +130, you're looking at 5.5 for sure. And we'd probably still want to take that. You're down to 4.5 just because he went under on the weekend. Now you're +130. The thing, Murray makes my card so much because he's always running with Trae Young, who's a big assist guy and kind of gets the focal point of the assist. So Murray's price moves pretty drastically based on like what he's done recently. In terms of like him playing the Spurs today, Wembanyama should kind of help Murray get over this total, because when, you know, Murray likes to get into the lane, kind of get to that mid-range a little bit with Wembanyama there, might not be able to get that shot off. Probably have to kick it to the shooters. The Hawks have 3-point shooters. That should help him get some assists. And then also when the flip side is when Wembanyama comes out of the game, I think there would be like a pretty strong emphasis on them running pick and roll with their bigs and kind of putting pressure on the rim. And they have a lot of lob threat guys too. So I think that will also help Murray. I think what Wembanyama will bring will kind of push Trae Young and Murray to play a certain way, and I think it should lead to more Murray assists. And this is also, it is kind of a trade spot for Murray too. I think if you're the Hawks, you kind of want to showcase him. And if you're Murray, I think you kind of want to showcase you're more than a scorer and you can be a point guard, because someone's trying to trade for him to be that kind of lead point guard role. So, and also the Spurs are in the mix here. They've been rumored to get him back. So who knows? He might be trying to show off for the Spurs here. I just think the Hawks are, they're going to try to put him in a lot of good spots in this game because they are trying to get a first round pick and a player, or they are trying to move on from him.
What do you think the Hawks do here over the next couple of years? Because they're not, they're kind of in purgatory, I guess, which is the worst place to be as an NBA team. You either want to be competing for a top spot in the playoffs or in a rebuild, I guess. They're kind of stuck in the middle, I guess, but they got Trae Young as their best player. They just went out and got a big-time coach last year, but it's not working out. You think they eventually blow it up and get rid of Trae Young here?
Trae Young was kind of, after Saturday's game, he was singing the praises of Quinn Snyder, saying he just needs time to build this. I feel like they're probably going to keep Trae Young and Quinn Snyder together. I think they just kind of need to shake up. It's such a weird team. There is a ton of talent on that team. It's just it's not working. And like even Jalen Johnson has stepped up and he's been phenomenal. I think he'll be the other guy. I think it'll be Trae Young, Jalen Johnson, Quinn Snyder. They kind of try to move forward with. I think they just need to shake up the guys. It could just honestly be like, we have no idea. We're not in the locker room. They just might get along. Like, who knows the personalities or stuff, but they have a ton of basketball talent. It's just not, they're not winning. They're not defending. I watched the Wizards game because I wanted to see it just because I knew I was coming on Murray today and I had it on the weekend, and there was the defensive effort is just like, they're just like looking around. They're like, yeah, they're like over it type thing. So I think they just need to shake up the roster with different people type thing.
Yeah. Blowing it up is much easier said than done too. Like if you want to do it right, it's going to take multiple seasons. Look at the OKC Thunder finally coming around out of the dust of Kevin Durant and Westbrook and all those guys, James Harden. It's coming to fruition for them, but other teams it is taking a little bit longer. So yeah, we'll see what the Hawks do here with the future. Moving on to the picks here. I like the Miami Heat coming in at +2 in Brooklyn, taking on the Nets. Tonight, most notably, a big defensive edge for the Heat in this game. 5th versus 26th in opponent EFG over the last 10 games. 4th versus 29th in three-point defense in that span. Ugly losses are adding up here for the Brooklyn Nets. And I'm starting to wonder, is this who they are? They got off to a pretty competitive start to the season, but they're really falling apart here lately. 1-7 in their last 8 games. Losses to the likes of Portland and Washington, getting smoked a few other times during that stretch of games. And expect a lot of action on the free throw line for the Heat. This could be the difference in this game. Miami, 3rd in free throw attempt rate over the last 10 games, 26th in opponent free throw attempt rate for the Nets. Now, most of those stats for the Heat are without Jimmy Butler. I'm making this bet based on the assumption that he won't play tonight, but he is traveling with the team. He's questionable to play. So if he does play, big bonus. But even if he doesn't, I am confident in Miami to cover that number +2, big coaching advantage for them. Steph Curry. What do we like for him, John?
Yeah, so Grizzlies, Warriors a little later today. It's not an afternoon game. I got Steph Curry over 4.5 assists. It was minus 125. There was a minus 129 at Caesars. A lot of the other books are up. They've moved it up to like the minus 150 range. In terms of Stephen Curry, so when Chris Paul went out, you know, that really helped Stephen Curry with his assist prop. Stephen Curry is, his potential assists have gone up by, it was like 8.5 during the regular season prior to like Chris Paul going out. And now he's, the last three games, he's been at 11. So he's 2.5 higher, but his total also was matching that. So his total got up to 5.5, 6.5. I actually played under 6.5 a couple of games ago. So his total had gone up with the matching that potential assist. Well, with Draymond Green coming back now, they've dropped it down to 4.5. I think they kind of overcorrected with the idea of Draymond Green coming back, because this 4.5 was more of Curry's number with Paul and Green, not necessarily just Green. And Paul's kind of the one who eats more into Curry's assist prop than Green. When Paul's in the lineup at the exact same time as Curry, it's really hard for Curry to get assists because Paul's just on the ball the whole time. But now with Paul out, you know, Curry's on the ball the whole time. I think they tried to adjust this for Green coming back. I just think it was overcorrected a little bit. We also don't even know. There was talking about like his conditioning and stuff. There's not even clarity if Draymond Green's starting, how many minutes he's going to play. So to have this total come down to full assists to kind of like accommodate Draymond Green coming back in the lineup, if he only plays like 20 minutes and say he doesn't even start, this could run completely opposite of, you know, his minutes might not even cross over as much with Career as they think it might. So even if Green was playing and starting, I still like this over. So that's why I went after it.
Yeah, that Draymond Green. So he's back tonight, right? Was that suspension he was given, like at the time it was an indefinite, but did they ever put an official number on it, or did it just remain an
indefinite? He had to complete like a rehab type thing. So he went and completed some course, or I don't know the exact details of it, but it lasted 16 games.
Did you catch the thing over the weekend with Chicago Bulls fans booed the widow of Jared? Isn't that one of the biggest disgraces that you've ever seen? Like, I'm a pretty easygoing guy. If the Philadelphia Eagles fans want to boo Santa Claus, okay, I'll get a kick out of that. I didn't specifically like when they booed Michael Irvin coming off the field on a stretcher, but Bulls fans, they blame Jerry Krause, maybe rightfully so, for blaming up the Bulls dynasty there in the 90s. And I don't know, they were honoring him or whatever, and his widow shows up and they booed the poor woman. That was one of the biggest disgraces I've ever seen in all of sports. It was maybe something that flew under the radar over the weekend, and Bulls fans, I think, should be ashamed of themselves. That was crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah, I saw Steve Kerr's comments, because Steve Kerr was there. They did during when they were playing the Warriors, because they're doing like the Ring of Honor for the championship team.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He put the fans on blast in his press conference, because he basically saying what you're saying. He's like, if you want to boo the guy because you think he ruined the dynasty, he also put it together type thing. So like, he brought six championships to this. So whatever, if you don't like him from making people leave and like ruining the dynasty, he also was a part of it. Like, so, and then for his wife. The wife show up to feel like it's supposed to be an honor type thing. And yeah, it was terrible. I saw the video. I was like, oh my God.
She was crying. It's one thing if it was him there and they booed him, it's like, okay, you know, maybe not the most classy thing, but hey, it's sports, but it was his widow, for God's sake. Okay. On to more fun stuff here. There's some afternoon games today and you have a couple of bets on your radar. Tell us about those.
Yeah, I did Brandon Ingram over 18.5 points. That one's moved pretty good. It's up to like 19.5 and actually kind of heavy juice the over. Just Ingram, he's been going under recently, but he's had six straight unders. But when that streak started, his total is 25.5 and today opened at 18.5. So you can kind of see how there might have been interest in going in the over there. That's a completely different probability than what he was trading at before. Also, it's not like the Mavericks are rolling out the best defensive lineup. I went with Kyrie Irving under 6.5 assists. So for Irving, that was kind of tied to like no Derek Lively, no Derek Jones. Derek Lively's questionable, so he technically could play, but I don't think he's going to play. So if you're Kyrie Irving, you're basically relying on a lot of jump shooting to get those assists. And those are really hard to convert potential assists for jump shooting. He just played the Pelicans on the weekend. He had 12 potential assists, 6 assists. So kind of like right on the number there, but 12 potential assists when you're trading like heavy, heavy juice to get over 6.5, that's not really the best, like as high as you'd want it. And he played 40 minutes. So that's a lot of minutes to get those 12 potential assists too. Like, there's no guarantees playing 40 tonight. I just think for Kyrie Irving, those assists are really, when you're relying like strictly on jump shooting, like who in the Mavericks roster starting lineup tonight is even playing above the rim. There's not really, like, Derek Jones is a guy who can do it and he can get dunks and convert assists, but he's out too. Like, you're looking at Tim Hardaway Jr., 3-point shooter, Grant Williams, 3-point shooter. There's no Dante Exum either. They're just missing. The roster to me doesn't scream like big over on assists, even though Doncic is out and Irving will be on the ball a lot. And the Lively one really hurts. Just Dwight Powell last game had 8 assists. So when you switch out Lively for Powell, it actually changes the assist quite a bit for Irving and Doncic. Cause if Irving throws up to Lively, he dunks it. He gives it to Lively, he dunks it. That's all Lively does, is he dunks it. You give it to Powell, he can't really do much. So he passes it to someone else and then you don't get the assist. So that's why I'm Kyrie Irving under. I went Dylan Brooks over 10.5 points too. That tips off in 20 minutes here. So
20 minutes, afternoon action in the NBA on a weekday. I absolutely love it. They should do more of it. I've said this before, and the people are like, well, they couldn't get people to go to the game. So if you do it in big cities like New York and Chicago and Los Angeles and Dallas, there's going to be enough people who aren't working at that time that will be able to come out to the games. And maybe you don't schedule the best of the game. Maybe when the Charlotte Hornets are rolling into New York to play the Knicks, maybe you put it on a Tuesday afternoon just for something different to try.
Field trip for the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. How much of a blast out up here in Canada? We'd go skating for a bit of a field trip. But yeah, going to a Knicks game would be a lot cooler. Okay, John, we will leave it at that. Best of luck with all your bets there tonight. And we'll catch you later on in the week.
All right, I'll see you guys on Thursday.
All right, buddy. All right. A very active chat here. Let's go through a negative one to start. Giving out losers again, says Comic Kish. I don't think that's completely fair. Over 30 units on the NFL season. NBA a little cold, though, to be fair. So you don't have to tail the picks on the show if you want to. The choice, quite simply, is yours. Steve Wang in says, pretty sure I heard Belichick was on the top of their list for the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know if that's official. And J-Lo and I, we talked about this. I think a lot of these big-time candidates going to Dallas, they might be a little bit turned off just because of the power that Jerry Jones and his son want to have with the team. So even like a guy like Vrabel, who's going to want to have a lot of say, and I guess that was part of the falling out there in Tennessee, the big A.J. Brown trade that really backfired on them. You know, I don't, maybe there's not a lot of appeal for a big time coach to go to Dallas. A lot of pressure there, a lot of unnecessary spotlight. Peter Lowing and McCarthy wasn't the problem. Dak early mistakes certainly started the avalanche, but the defense was dog shit all day. Defensive coordinator should be finding a new job. I agree and disagree. I think McCarthy was a big part of the problem. You have to have the team ready to come out firing in that game on your home field, where they were undefeated at home, by the way, and they just had nothing. They came out flat, and it got away from them right off the bat. Dak is an issue. This is a real issue in the playoffs for him now. Once you have the weight of that pressure on your shoulders, it's hard to get rid of that. It's hard to overcome that. It's like the recent versions of the Yankees here in Major League Baseball, always a great regular season, not this past year. But they'd have the 100-win regular season, then get into the playoffs and just absolutely suck. And we see that here with the Dallas Cowboys. Dan Quinn, he was supposed to be a big-time head coach candidate. What they got, 48 points yesterday at home? You want to bring in Dan Quinn as your head coach? Sounds like a mistake to me. Turk saying Dak and McCarthy must go. McCarthy, yes. Dak, I think his contract makes it tough just to cut him. I don't know the ins and outs of that totally, but who are you going to bring in? You want to bring in Kirk Cousins? He doesn't have a good reputation in big games either. I think he's won one playoff game, and it was that Minnesota Miracle game. Some really positive stuff here. Brett Sweeney, this is some awesome capping from capping or coping. Maybe coping about my Dolphins or capping, given the picks I gave out. Either way, I appreciate the compliment. All love from Brett there. We appreciate that. Juju says, go Texans. Yeah, that would be a good story. I have the Texans in a playoff pick pool, so if they continue to advance, I'll be happy with that as well. Peter Lowe, Jordan Love throwing darts since Thanksgiving Day. Backdoor cover for Green Bay. I'm guessing that's what his prediction is in San Francisco. And yeah, just you got to be patient with these young quarterbacks sometimes. People kind of forgot, like, he's been around for so long, but he was this was his first year as a full-time starter. Didn't get off to an incredible start by any means, but, you know, there were some hiccups, some bumps in the road along the way getting here. So yeah, be patient with these guys. It's paying off for Love. He'll probably go into next season as a top 10 quarterback on a lot of people's lists based a lot on that performance he had yesterday in Dallas. Bill Lyon says Chicago fans disgrace themselves with that one. Yeah. So thank you guys very much for weighing in the comments section. If you're watching the replay of the show, hit up the comments section. Let us know what your best bets are. Let us know what your predictions are for Bill Belichick. Is he going to the Dallas Cowboys? Quick recap on my bets here, guys. If you missed the top of the show, I like the Steelers to keep things a little bit close here in Buffalo. The Bills 0-8 against the spread in their last 8 games as a double-digit favorite. Jalen Warren to go over 3.5 receptions. He has at least 4 and 5 straight games, and I'll take the under 43.5 in Tampa Bay with the Eagles in town. Okay, that's it. What a show today. Went almost 50 minutes here. A lot to talk about here. less games, but a lot to talk about. So I hope you guys enjoyed the show today. If you did, hit that like button right down there. Make sure you are subscribed to the Covers YouTube channel. We'll be right back with you guys later on in the week to get you all set for the divisional round. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Best of luck with your bets tonight, and we will catch you again next time. Woo!